This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
How do you do, fellow kids? My name is Tom. This is DreamPod episode
72.
And I am joined once again by an all-star cast of Dreamcast nerds. Mike, hello.
Tom, afternoon, evening.
How's it going? All right?
Yes. I'm ready for another lovely DreamPod.
Fantastic. Lewis, how are you doing?
I'm good, yeah.
Loads of enthusiasm in the room today. James, how's it going?
Let's go. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Hello, hello.
That's what I'm talking about. More enthusiasm. Yes, come on, let's go. DreamPods. Woo! Right, guys, we've got a lot to talk about on this episode. It's going to mainly be a news-style episode because there's quite a lot of stuff that's happened in the recent fortnight around the Dreamcast. I just want to say thank you, actually, to Andrew, who has joined the team as a podcast host. He did a fantastic job on the last episode, so thank you to Andrew. Also, quick plug for his book, Dreamcast Year One. I know we've spoken about it at length.
Another one?
Yeah. if you want to get his book, you can do. Just search Dreamcast Year One on your search engine of choice. I'm sure you'll find it. But yeah, let's crack on and begin as we always do on this podcast. We're going to talk about the games we've played recently, either on the Dreamcast or on other gaming hardware. Let's come to Lewis first. Lewis, what have you been playing?
So I've been on a little bit of a extreme sports kick. It started out with the idea I wanted to cover all the extreme sports games on the Dreamcast and realize I don't own many of them. So that's something I've put off, and instead I've been playing Skate, EA's Skate on PS3, which is a new thing for me because I absolutely love Tony Hawk, the Tony Hawk Pro Skater games. And so I went to play Skate, and I'm kind of unsure about it. I'm sort of middling. You know, it definitely departs from the arcadey feel that Tony Hawk has, and Skate is more like a simulator game. And yeah, I wasn't really sure about the controls at first, and I still don't know what I think after playing it for quite a considerable amount of time. So yeah, I find using the analog sticks on the controller to do flips and stuff a little bit too inaccurate. Whereas Tony Hawk is just, you know,
buttons, yeah.
Yeah, it just feels more simple.
I've never played Skate myself, to be honest. I like the sort of the camera angle because it's kind of quite down low, isn't it? Sort of behind the skater. But I've never actually played it myself, so interesting.
I feel like on Tony Hawk, you could literally get given the game, and as long as you know the buttons, you could pull off one of the best tricks, you know, then and there, you know. Mm. But Skate, I feel like the reason why it's more of a simulator, it kind of puts you in that zone of, you know, what would it be like if I was a skateboarder? Because when you pull off tricks, because it's more difficult and it requires a lot more precision, you're kind of feeling like you're in that sort of skateboarder mindset, like you've tried really hard and you've landed the trick you've been working at. So it does have that kind of cool feeling about it, like kind of putting you in that zone. But yeah, I'm not quite sure what I feel about it. It's all right, but yeah, and also the soundtrack is a bit crap.
Okay, that's interesting.
I like Booker T and the MGs, but I don't really want to skate to Green Onions. It just doesn't feel correct, you know. We need Bad Religion or something like that.
Damn right. Yeah. Are you playing anything on the Dreamcast?
The only thing I've been playing on my sort of extreme sports kick was Dave Mirra. So I had a bit of a go on that, and that was, you know, I was cool. I feel like a lot of the Z-axis games feel like they're kind of, I don't know, they're not quite as good as the Activision games. They feel kind of like, you know, the B-sides to them. Like they do kind of the same thing, but they're not as refined as Tony Hawk or Matt Hoffman.
Yeah. Matt Hoffman's a much better game, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Which, for some reason, was never released in Europe. That's one thing I found out on my little quest. Yeah.
Well,
that's me, really. Yeah.
Thank you, Lewis. I believe the term is bodacious. Moving on next to...
that's the second late 90s phrase you've used today, Tom.
How old did you say you were again, Tom?
Yeah, I think he's having a midlife crisis.
38. Mike, what have you been playing?
So I'll come out straight away and say not much on Dreamcast, but my two main things this month have actually been both sort of Dreamcast connected. I've been playing through the Yakuza series on PS4. I've got all the games and I really haven't played much of them because I play for about an hour, then I get into an arcade and I forget about the game. So even though I've had them all since the day they came out, I haven't actually played any of them properly. So I've been playing through Yakuza Zero. I mean, those sort of massive Sega fan service, massive Shenmue vibes. Fantastic. I mean, just fantastic game. Every single part of it is just really enjoyable.
To be honest, Mike, I haven't really played any of the Yakuza games, but I mean, I know of them. And the one thing that sticks in my mind when I think of Yakuza is a clip I saw from a review. I think it was the Angry Joe review on YouTube, of a guy beating up a big group of other men, but spinning around while holding a motorcycle in his hands.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty much half the course. I mean, it's utterly insane. The entire game is just insane. I mean, the last mission I played, well, it wasn't the last mission, but the mission I played on Saturday was helping a dominatrix and trying to explain to her how to treat her customers. And that's sort of typical for Yakuza games. It's a very strange game, but just wonderful. I think anyone who's a Sega fan, and I'm preaching to the converted, I'm sure, because most people who listen to this podcast have probably played through all the Yakuzas already. But, I mean, really, really good. It's like Shenmue, if Shenmue wasn't really stiff controls and a little bit boring, let's be honest.
You can say shit, Mike, it's okay.
I love Shenmue, but, you know, let's face it, it's a bit boring. Yakuza's not quite like that. And the other thing I've been playing is sort of a group of things, which is Japanese Saturn shoot-em-ups. I'm on somewhat of a binge and somewhat of a obsession at the current time. I've been picking up some Japanese games on Saturn anyway, and I've been really into the shoot-em-ups. Dodonpachi, I think I talked about it last time. I've also been playing the Parodius games, and in the mail today, I've got In the Hunt and one of the other Parodius games as well. So I'm really into them at the current time, and that's all because of Dreamcast. I didn't play shoot-em-ups at all until I started getting involved with the Junkyard, really. So I'm really into them now. I love you know, coming home for half an hour ago on a shoot 'em up is much more useful for my time than a long drawn out game.
Excellent. Well, Mike, I didn't actually know that In the Hunt was released on the Saturn, so you've just educated me. I thought it was on the PlayStation only.
Yes, I think it was released on PAL as well. I'm sure. I think I know it was, but it's decent game. I haven't played it before. It's one of those games I don't think's had a re-release. I don't think so.
Are we talking about the submarine game?
Yeah,
it was released on the Switch, wasn't it, recently?
Oh, was it?
Yeah, okay. I believe so. Yeah. Interesting stuff. Cool. All right, nice one, Mike. James, what have you been doing other than tearing up the track in your race car? What have you been doing?
Well, I was just going to say, actually, I've been on a bit of a racing game kick recently. I've been back on the sim because, as you said, racing season is coming up, so I need to get my eye back in. But from a Dreamcast side, I've been doing a lot of racing on the Dreamcast. I wrote an article two weeks ago.
Yeah.
So did a bit of research, was just digging out. So the article, for those who haven't read it, was about kind of the lesser known good Dreamcast racing games. And played quite a bit of Revolt again whilst I was writing that. And the one that really got my attention again, and every time I play this game, I seem to get hooked on it for hours and hours, and I played this over multiple nights, was Tokyo Highway Challenge, which is, it's such a simple concept to that game. But once you start playing it, you start racking up the cash, start tuning your cars, you just get completely absorbed by it, and it's one of those games that, because it's got a nighttime setting, it still looks really good when you play it today, especially when it kind of runs along quite nicely at 60 frames. So it's taken up most of my kind of casual gaming, if I'm honest, just kind of playing through this again. I just started a new save and have just kind of started from the beginning, and should have it finished in the next week or so, I expect. But the other one actually was inspired by yours and Mike's Power Drifting podcast, which inspired me to dive back into Sega Rally.
Excellent.
And just kind of, yeah, been playing around. It was a game that I play. I never owned it, you know, back in back when the Dreamcast was contemporary. Sort of played it a few times over friends' houses, and certainly played it a lot in the arcade, but never actually owned the Dreamcast version. So, yeah, I've just kind of I started the 10-season championship thingy and just kind of figuring out all the different cars and the ridiculously oversensitive power slide. And but it's good fun. And I was just I was messaging you guys just sort of saying like about the, because I know there's a load of cheats to kind of improve the frame rate and that sort of thing. So just having to play around with it really, and yeah, enjoying the sort of the epitome of Sega racing really, I think is what you'd describe Sega Rally as. But yeah, there's been a lot of Dreamcast playing recently, and the only other thing is the Hideout demo, which we're going to talk about in a bit. So I'll keep shtum on that for now.
Excellent, cool. Yeah, I mean, I remember playing the sequel to Tokyo Highway Challenge, which was obviously Tokyo Highway Challenge 2 on the Dreamcast for hours and hours. I used to put on, does anybody remember Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell? It was like a radio, radio station or a podcasty thing where they would talk about like the paranormal and stuff.
Okay.
And they talk about conspiracy theories and whatnot. And I'd just put one of those on and then play on Tokyo Highway Challenge with the sound down, and I just played for hours listening to Coast to Coast AM. So yeah, that's why the two are linked in my mind.
I never played the sequel on Dreamcast, but I did play. There was a version on Xbox 360 called Import Tuner Challenge, which was also amazing, and I spent a long, long time playing that one as well. It's a really good series. Obviously, if you follow the Wangan Midnight anime as well, it kind of ties it all together, but yeah, it's a really good series. I wish there was a version on current gen, to be honest.
It was quite surprising when we had Tokyo Highway Challenge 2 on play Blackpool a couple of years ago, and the amount of people who actually queued up to play it, I think they were quite impressed with. I know it was on DCHDMI, but it was a real crowd draw. It was as I'm sure Tom remembers, it was real really popular game. It looked amazing on the console.
It looked really slick, didn't it, on the big HDTV? Yeah, I mean, through the DCHDMI, it looked amazing, yeah.
I mean, it looked like a, I'm not going to say 360 game, I don't think it's that advanced, but it did look, you know, 10 years newer than it was.
Definitely. Excellent. Good games there, guys. Myself, I've mainly been playing current gen. I've mainly been playing on the Switch. I got a game called Unraveled 2. It was on sale on the Switch eShop for like £5 or something, so I gave that a go. You play this little man who's made of yarn, and you have to kind of navigate like a 2D side-scrolling world, and you've got a little friend that helps you, and it's just really cool. It's a nice little co-op game as well, so I bought that just so that me and my girlfriend could play something together, because she's not really a gamer, but if she sees something like that with like little cute characters, she's probably more likely to get involved. So I've been playing a bit of that. Dreamcast-wise, again, this is a shameless plug for myself and Mike's other podcast project, which is called Power Drifting. It's a rally game podcast, and I've been playing quite a bit of V-Rally 2 on the Dreamcast just because we did an episode on it recently, and I started playing it just to get my head back around that game, and I just didn't stop playing it because I think it's really good. So, yeah V-Rally 2 on the Dreamcast. Okay, guys. A good mix there of games, old and new. Let's dive into the news, though, for the Dreamcast. Another new game, which has hit the PlayStation 4 this last week, is, it's Space Channel 5. It's back. I know this game was actually teased about 3 years ago, and there was a big kind of online kind of... there was a lot of hype about a new Space Channel 5 game, but it was only when the details came down the pipe that people realised that it was more of a tech demo for VR headsets. We finally got the game now. It's called Space Channel 5, Kinda Funky, or what's it called? Space Channel 5 VR, Kinda Funky Newsflash. Now, I don't think any of us here actually played this game, have we?
No.
No. However... No. Our roving reporter from our sister site, The Saturn Junkyard, Brian Vines, has done a rather excellent review for the game on the Dreamcast Junkyard, the main blog. And he's not that impressed with it. The main problem being that it's just not a lot of game for the money. And this is the problem with a lot of VR games, I find. They do tend to be more tech demo-y than actual full-fledged games. I mean, I wasn't a massive fan of Space Channel 5 in the first place. I've never really got on with those kind of Simon Says-style games. But, yeah, I mean, what are your memories of the original? And does this actually have any appeal for you? I mean, Mike?
I love the first one. I'm a massive Space Channel 5 fan. I love the game. I think it's really cool. I think it's a really interesting and really dynamic game. But my challenges with VR have been documented on this podcast before. I love PSVR until it made me feel sick to the point that I couldn't stand for about 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah, it was awful. So I mean, the game looks great. I mean, it's great to see all of these Dreamcast games suddenly come to VR, and we've had Res already, which was fantastic. I played that on VR, and that was, you know, mind-blowing. I mean, it's an interesting game. I can see why they would have picked it. It's really, really colourful, really enjoyable. But, I mean, to me, it is, as you said, it's a tech demo. Brian's article on Junkyard is actually fantastic. And I think that sums up a lot of what I feel about it. It's not really enough depth for a modern game for me.
Yeah, I'm the same. I mean, I have a PSVR headset. I don't get the sickness that Mike evidently experiences. But to be honest, mine's been gathering dust. I bought it and because I'd never tried VR at the time, so I was quite excited because it was a fairly low entry point compared to obviously the PC VR stuff at the time.
Yeah.
And almost everything I've played on it has felt very much like a limited kind of look what the technology can do kind of demo. And some of it's amazing. Yeah. But when you're charging close to a retail release price for something, I think people generally tend to expect, obviously, you know, a good few weeks worth of gameplay in there at the very least. So I'm the same as Mike. I love the IP. I'd probably try anything that got released as a contemporary version of a Dreamcast IP. But yeah, just the fact that it's 40 quid for what sounds like, you know, less than an hour's worth of gameplay feels like it's a wait for it to be in a sale for a fiver and then maybe try it then.
Yeah, yeah. I basically echo everything you just said. I own a PSVR. It hasn't been played for, it hasn't been played for possibly a year. I've not played on it for about a year now. If this had come out and it was about $9.99, I might have been tempted to give it a go, but just reading Brian's review and looking at just how little, you know, content there actually is, I wouldn't pay what they're charging for it, not a chance. What about you, Lewis? Any thoughts?
Space Channel 5, unfortunately, is, I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast, it's a game that I think is awesome. Love the music, love the aesthetic. It's just, I suck at it. I suck at all kind of rhythm games. I kind of scratched my head a little at this one. We've been giving Sega a lot of big props recently for, you know, things they've been doing and giving us a little bit of love in regards to old IPs. But they've just recently, we've had Choo Choo Rocket, is it Universe? Choo Choo Rocket Universe? The one on the Apple Arcade.
Yeah.
They've got that. So that one has a barrier to entry. Admittedly, not as expensive as the PSVR. And then now you've got Space Channel 5, but it's on the VR. So it's kind of like what you're doing a little bit. Like from me, I feel a little bit like they're sort of.
They're kind of dangling these IPs in front of your face, but there's always like some kind of weird caveat that comes with it.
I think it could be a test run though, couldn't it? Because it's like they don't know how much Space Channel 5 game is going to sell. And Shenmue 3 didn't sell massively well. You know, I think they're trying to maybe put the feelers out, seeing which of their franchises are getting the most attention. We had a little bit of Sega on Twitter saying about Jet Set Radio. I think it's some kind of graffiti competition, isn't it? I'm not entirely sure what happened, really. It seems like they're trying to put the feelers out. Now, of course, some people will say, oh, it means a new console's coming out. Of course it's not. But there's obviously going to be something.
Dreamcast 2.
We can't mention Dreamcast 2. We've had many arguments on this podcast. But I think definitely they're looking at possibly stepping up from just having another Sonic, another release of Sonic on the Mega Drive, because I think, you know, the amount of times I've seen, oh, Sega announce a release of Sonic on the Mega Drive, I mean, I don't care anymore. I've got like 50 versions of the damn game. So I think maybe looking at other franchises is really interesting, and that could be the next step, because obviously the VR as well, VR is in sort of 0.9 mode, as it were. It's not quite the full-fledged setup. So I think when it comes to the next generation of consoles, maybe we'll have something a bit more interesting.
So, guys, what are the odds of a Spirit of Speed 1937 reboot in VR?
Very large.
Yeah.
I'd buy it.
You fucking would as well, yeah.
So, yeah, if you're listening to this episode and you want to check out Brian's awesome and very funny review, you can do. Just go to our main blog site, which is just thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk, and you will find it if you search hard enough. Okay. Let's move on to our next story. This is a story about hardware as opposed to software. This is the new TR Fight Stick Dream Case, which has been recently announced by TR Fight Stick. I believe is it a Turkish company? They
possibly
are offering you, dear listener, the opportunity to own a metal case for your Dreamcast for the princely sum of $149. And it doesn't come with a plug. You have to buy the plug separately. I remember this was announced about 2 years ago. And it was originally going to be in collaboration with Behar Bros, you know, the guys who make the really cool, high-quality HDMI adapters and things for the Dreamcast. I have noticed that the Behar Bros connection has kind of disappeared. But, yeah, for people who are not sure what I'm actually talking about, TR Fight Stick is an organisation that makes like bespoke arcade controls and stuff like that. And if you go to their website, which is at trfightstick.com, I believe, you'll find on there a reference to a new shell that you can put take your Dreamcast apart, take all the innards out and put it into this shell. There are, again, some caveats with this. It will only work if your Dreamcast has been modded with a GDMU or a similar kind of solid state device, because it does away with the ability for you to put GD-ROMs into your Dreamcast. And it looks like a little small form factor PC box, a little sort of shiny metal case. As I say, it doesn't come with a plug. You need to buy your own 12-volt adapter, which they do also sell quite conveniently. I'll just read out some of the features that they list on the website before we discuss what we think about this thing. So it has a blue backlight, which is inside, shines through the little swirl on the top of the case. It's compatible with the GDMU and the DC HDMI rather nicely. It needs the 12-volt mini power supply. It's got an extender PCB for SD card. It's got a game swap button for GDMU. It's compatible with the DreamPi and a 56K modem. It's got a silent fan. And it's got a metal sticker with a serial number for each case, which is a weird thing to boast about.
Is that a feature?
The front of the case does actually allow you to have the original four controller ports, but it looks like a sort of a 3D printed little sort of bezel with Dreamcast written on it. I think the jury's out really on this one about what the Dreamcast community thinks. There've been some kind of positive and negative comments on the article we did, and also on social media. I think the general consensus is that it doesn't look like a Dreamcast, that it should be, you know, killed with fire. But what do you guys think? Is this something that you'd purchase if it was cheaper, or is it just complete? Yeah, no.
Can I jump in here?
Go on, go ahead.
I've noticed that your article has a considerable more amount of views than, you know, all the articles that we spend hours on.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
there's
yeah.
that one with like way more views. And I think it's just everyone going on like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, yeah.
What is this? You know, just to judge it. So
how blasphemous it is to make a Dreamcast look like basically a small form factor PC. I mean, I'm open to all kinds of anything, really. I mean, if someone likes it and wants it, then, you know, crack on. But I mean,
look,
it kind of
at the end of the day, Tom, if you don't use your Dreamcast in the original case, you're just a shell. It's just not right. You know, it's just not the right design. Mm-hmm. I don't actually mind it. I think the front is horrible and it ruins it for me. It looks really cheap. That, like you were saying, that Dream case, 3D printed, horrific sort of outer ring around the front bit looks dreadful.
It does say on the website that that this thing isn't actually available to buy yet. It's only a pre-order, and they will only actually put it into production if it reaches 100 pre-order pieces of $149 each. And it also says that the prototype in the images that we've got on the site are the plastic 3D printed parts, and the actual product will have actual like injection molded parts.
Okay.
So
fair
it
enough.
Looks slightly better than it does already at the moment.
I think there's a place there if your Dreamcast is your kind of your everyday console, and you know we all know how difficult it is to get replacement cases for any Dreamcast that have kind of had you know bad yellowing or crack cases or whatever. It's not for me. I mean, I've mentioned previously on the podcast that a big part of playing with original hardware is that nostalgic feeling, right? We were talking about the that new controller that was on Kickstarter.
Oh yeah.
And it's the same for this. I mean, I've got nothing against anyone who wants to use it. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned it supports DreamPi. It would have been a lot nicer if you could kind of cradle the DreamPi inside the box. Would have made it a lot more attractive for someone like me who does a lot of online gaming, rather than just basically giving you the standard kind of phone port in the back to plug it into.
Yeah.
That would have been quite appealing. But the blue swirl on the top looks really nice, and yeah, it looks it looks smart from that angle, but. It's just a bit of shit.
Wow,
I don't see. I think the only question I've got is why.
Yeah, I think that's probably why.
It looks. I understand people want a metal case. Great, fantastic. I get the point of you know it's difficult sometimes to get replacement things. You know, you can get a Dreamcast for £40, not 100 and whatever they're charging for this. But I mean, it just. When I think someone's mentioned this on Twitter, so I'm going to steal someone's comment. When does a Dreamcast stop becoming a Dreamcast? Because you know, to me, this is just, and it looks quite generic to me as well. Doesn't have the form of a Dreamcast. Doesn't have that sort of. If they'd done a shape in the shape of a Dreamcast, I'd been far more interested. A metal Dreamcast.
It looks to me like it looks like a mock-up of a really bad Dreamcast 2 mock-up.
Yeah, it does.
it looks like a Wii. It looks like a Wii on its side.
It does actually.
I think there'd be a much bigger market, as I said, if people, you know, made a mold out of the current casing and started to make, you know, translucent molds in different colors and everything. I think that would actually have a market, and I think people would actually pay, you know, 40-50 quid for that.
Well, they are doing it, aren't they? They are.
I think that'll have a market, but I'd be very surprised if they sell many of these personally.
Look, I mean, I don't want to just completely pile on these guys because, I mean, they are doing something new and original for the Dreamcast community, so, you know, props to them for that. I just think that maybe the case design could have been a little bit nicer.
I get being nice, Tom, but, I mean, they're charging a lot of money. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I understand. I'm no offense to the guys. I've no problem with them at all. And if people like it, then fantastic. But I mean, there's so many things that we could be, you know, doing for Dreamcast, or people could be doing for Dreamcast. I just don't think this is. I don't think it fills a particular need that the Dreamcast community has. Maybe I'm not the one they're marketing to, though.
I have one last thing to say about this. I have this scenario in my head that one day I'll meet Kanye West and he'll say, I'm a big fan of the Dreamcast. And so I'll go to his house and this is his Dreamcast.
Where are you meeting? I've got so many more questions about this. Where exactly are you meeting Kanye West and where does he live?
I don't know, just one day me and Kanye West will be best friends.
Brought together through the dream case.
Yeah, exactly. See, we'll bond over our mutual love for this niche console.
Well, the metal Dreamcast case is no longer the weirdest thing on this podcast.
Right, let's move on to the next topic of discussion, and that is the discussion about a new demo that's just been released for the Dreamcast, Rhea P. Recycle. Again, this is something that we covered way back in the mists of time. I say mists of time. I think it was about 2018. It was a very kind of brief glimpse at a new, very enigmatic game for the Dreamcast that looked a bit like a point-and-click stroke puzzle game, which is essentially what we've ended up getting in the form of a demo. This demo was released on itch.io or itch.io in the last week or so, and it's available for name your own price. I paid $2 because I couldn't live with myself if I just took it for free. It's a very interesting little indie game from I believe it's a Swedish indie developer. I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. So it's called Reappear Recycle. The demo's out now, and it takes the form of a point-and-click game with heavy, heavy esoteric puzzle elements. Guys, I think we've all played this in the last week or so.
Yeah.
I'm going to come to you first, Lewis, and ask your opinions of it, because I believe you are the one who solved it first.
Again, a podcast host has insulted me on a podcast. This is ridiculous.
Mike actually helped me, just for the record.
I apologise. I'm still going to come to you first, Lewis.
It's kind of interesting, really, because I think maybe if you'd have told me about this game and said it's on the Switch or it's on the PC, I probably wouldn't have played it, but I think that's probably the beauty of the Dreamcast in general and the community that we are part of, because it kind of leads us in the direction of little games like this. And, you know, what I did play of it was cool. I got very sort of heavy Mist vibes from it. I think it's more just sort of those pre-rendered visuals, the way they look kind of reminds me of Mist and that era of point and click games. I quite enjoyed it. You guys saw I got a pen and a pad and I started writing down all these codes and trying to figure it out. I think James might have done that as well at some point. And you know, that was nice. It was kind of nostalgic to me, reminded me of my granddad, who still plays video games, actually, just to add. He plays through Alundra back on the PS1, and anyone who knows that game knows how cryptic it is. And, you know, I remember working these puzzles out with him and, you know, writing things down. And it also kind of reminds me of that sort of pre-game facts era when, you know, your mate would come round and be like, oh, well, have you tried this? And, it was kind of fun, actually, for a moment. We were sharing our hints about this game. Like, Mike helped me get to the end of it by giving me some hints. So I kind of liked that. I kind of liked that way that we couldn't just Google the answers and we actually had to figure it out. And it was felt quite rewarded when I finished it. So it is really cool. And I'd love to see some more, actually. Like I say, probably wouldn't have played it otherwise, but now I'm interested to see the next bit.
Yeah, the Dreamcast Junkyard staff WhatsApp group turned into a bit of a self-help group, really, didn't it?
Everyone sharing pictures of their little sketches and stuff. Yeah, that was pretty cool, actually. It's funny you say that, though, Lewis. This is so niche, it's unbelievable. You know, how many people are going to play this game on a Dreamcast or on an emulator? There is no guide on the internet. There is no way of finding out how to do it unless you do it yourself or you've got friends to kind of help you, which was really nice to see in our little group where everyone was like sharing the little sketches and the codes they'd written down. So that was really cool. Just for people who have never seen this game and don't really understand what we're talking about, the game, as I say, Reappear Recycle, it starts off, it's kind of like a sort of pre-rendered 2D background, and you control this little sort of disembodied spirit. And you can go around the room using the analog stick on the controller to move this kind of spirit little shape around. And you press A on various things of interest around the map, around the room. And so you can like read stuff that's on the wall, like scrolls on the wall. You're in like a sort of a study, like a magician's study or an alchemist's study. So you can look at the books on the shelves. You can look at all the different canonical, what do you call them? Alchemist's equipment on the shelves and on the desks. But ultimately, what you have to do is you have to solve a puzzle, which is in the form of a floating cube, which is on this pedestal in the middle of the room. And you can only solve it by looking at the clues around the room, as I say, writing them down or taking screenshots and then going to the puzzle cube and trying to solve the little puzzle that's on the top of it. It's very difficult, if I'm being honest. And it's a very interesting little demo. Mike, what was your experience?
Yeah, really good. It reminded me a lot of late 90s PC games. A lot of demos you'd get, a lot of freeware stuff. I'm talking like things like Sanitariums, that sort of isometric viewpoint which is what the game has, a sort of isometric viewpoint, and sort of slightly obscure, slightly arcane puzzles with a very strong mystical and that sort of supernatural sort of style to it. Of the pictures in the a lot of the books, you can see the pictures in the books, you can see sort of diagrams. They're really well done as well, which is really interesting. So there's one bit where they look inside a book and there's a picture in the book, and I was quite impressed with how detailed and how well that was depicted on screen. I echo what Lewis said as well. It's just a fun in, not in a way where you sort of got a spaceship blasting aliens. It's more of a thinking game, it's a real community game as well. I think this is exactly what Lewis said. The fact that we were helping each other out, and the fact that there was a lot of talk about it, I think that's what it's something we don't really have within Dreamcast community. There are a couple of games like it on the indie scene. Ilanzar and Philia, I believe it's called. One of the Orion games, which is a very mist-like game. That's quite similar. But because it's a commercial release, didn't really have that sort of impact. This is quite good, and the developers were sort of feeding back to us as well and sort of saying, no, keep on going and stuff, when we couldn't understand the clues. So really good. I think it's going to be a really interesting game. To me now, it goes to my top of my list in terms of most wanted Dreamcast games, because I think this is really exciting, really just a really different type of game, and it's something which we really haven't had before.
I echo that. I was kind of interested in it when I was looking at the still screenshots of it a while ago. I just really liked the art style of it, and I've always liked kind of point and click adventure type games as well. I must admit to having to enlist my wife's help when it comes to most of these puzzles, because I'm not the quickest when it comes to solving this stuff. But I really, really enjoyed playing through it, and as you've all sort of said, it was really nice to kind of not have your hand held throughout the entire thing, where you just kind of follow the prompts on the screen and know exactly where to go, and it did give you a real sense of accomplishment. So I just hope they put it on Kickstarter or something now, just to get a bit of funding, just so they can focus on actually getting it finished and getting it released. Because I think it's a different game, and it'll be great to have a retail release of this, in a box that you can put on your shelf.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Maybe with some little like maps and things like that came with
Mist. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
There's an interesting comment on our article from one of the developers who says that it took them about 3 years to get to this point. And I'm hoping that when they see the positive feedback that the game has got, or this demo has got, that it gives them like more impetus to kind of put more time into it. Because as Mike said, this has gone straight to the top of my wanted list for indie Dreamcast games. It's just so different, and right up my street with the kind of mystical, almost like eldritch illustrations in the books, and just that kind of musty, kind of old, ancient magic style of game imagery. I love it.
I just want to add on the end, it is a really short demo. So yeah. I think that although I think me and James, I think you had some issues as well actually burning it. But we managed to play it on emulators and it worked fine. So, I feel just because of its length that it's a really quick one that you can just throw on. So, other than the puzzle solving. But I mean, as far as, other games that, are coming out, this one's a quick one you can get through. So I feel that we should all give it a go, knowing that.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, if you listen to this, go to our blog or go to Google and look for Reappear Recycle. I'll spell it for you. It's R-E-A-P-E-R-I, and then cycle. So, yeah, Reappear Recycle. Give it a go. It's great. Okay, guys, we're going to change tack slightly now. We're going to have a little bit of a discussion about an unreleased game, one that's got the mysteriousness around a good old-fashioned hunt for something that maybe never existed in the first place. Lewis, you wrote an article on the Dreamcast Junkyard a couple of weeks ago, which I'd found absolutely fascinating. And I said to you when you were writing it, and I saw the demo, or sort of the draft of it, just how intriguing it was. It's the mystery of a game called Real Racer 9. And I'll let you take over here, because it's your baby, really. But if you could just explain to people what this is and how you discovered it, that'd be a good start.
Okay, so I was browsing Reddit and some user had posted this photograph and he said, this is an unreleased Dreamcast game. I've only ever seen this photograph. And if you go to the article, you will see the photograph right at the top. And it's basically of what looks like a sort of almost like a track and field game. The screenshot is of a female character running down like a long stretch of road with all like lap counters and stuff on the HUD. Yeah. And there's a guy basically playing it, and the sort of big thing that sticks out is that he's using a Dreamcast maraca. I mean, really, the fact that it was unreleased was interesting, but the fact that he was using these controllers, which one game uses them, and then there's some others that I think kind of unofficially use them, like Mr. Driller. Yeah, he's playing this game, and I was kind of thinking, well, what else do we know about this? And I kind of went on a little bit of a search. You can do a reverse image search. I found that photograph on a Japanese website, which was detailing Spring Tokyo Game Show 2001. And actually, we sort of enlisted the help of PC Wizard 13 in the end. And we basically reached the conclusion that this was actually a game that was created by a student at a Japanese university or school where they teach game design, that was actually owned by Enix. It was called the Digital Entertainment Academy. And they had a lot of investment from these big video game companies. Students would go to this academy, you know, they'd study there and learn how to, you know, do game design. And then they'd all probably end up getting jobs at these massive video game companies. And what we eventually found after a little bit of like going back and forth, that it was kind of like a showcase piece for the academy, probably either to get new students or you know, potential investors from other video game companies, or maybe just for this person who'd made this game to, you know, pitch his game to potential publishers. Yeah, so we don't really know what happened after that, and obviously it never got released on the Dreamcast, so maybe no one was interested, but and we don't know who the person is either, and that would be really interesting to know if they ever went on to have a sort of a great career in the video game industry. So yeah, that's kind of where we're up to, and we'd really love to delve a bit further, so if anyone can assist, please help. This is our call.
Send help. Yeah, it's a fascinating story, and I commend you for the amount of research that you did into this, just off that one image, and of course with PC Wizard as well, who has obviously helped with other investigations in the past, most notably the search for the barber. I'm looking at the image now. I mean, the guy who's to the right of the screen, who's obviously on looking, he's clearly the custodian of that particular stand, and he's watching somebody play the game. And yeah, as you say, we don't know who that is. You can only see the back of his head. So it could be somebody who went on to do great things in the Dreamcast world or other hardware. But yeah, the game itself, I mean, just looking at that, it's obviously running on an actual Dreamcast, because they've got a Dreamcast controller. They've got a fishing rod, it looks like, on the little table in front of the screen. And they've also got controls, like, on a little poster showing you, you know, what the thing can do. So yeah, it's really intriguing.
On the articles, actually, this is where PC Wizard was incredibly helpful. One of the articles he found, it said it was talking about the booth where this was, and one of the details we found was actually that it says we don't know if this was everything, so it could potentially, this might have just been on a normal Dreamcast, but the bit that sort of stuck out was it says that it was running on real development units, so you never know, it could be a development unit out there somewhere with this game in, I suppose. But yeah, I'm very much doubtful, but you know, we can dream.
This is where Nintendo got the idea for the Wii. This is motion detected running with a nunchuck.
It's interesting to think that people are trying to do more with the maracas.
Yeah, just on the topic of the actual game itself, I mean, how it would work, I mean, obviously, with the maracas, the pad that you stand on doesn't actually do anything. It's just a piece of plastic. The actual way the maracas work is that there are sensors on the wires that kind of go near the sensors on the bar that connects to the Dreamcast. So I'm wondering if you could actually just play it by standing in place and moving your arms as if you were running. So you could just move them up and down like you were milking a cow or something. Do you know what I mean?
It would be weird, wouldn't it? Because you'd have to literally do like a milking cow movement. Maybe it was just shaking, and the harder you shook it, that sounds dodgy as well.
Everyone would say it. It's like we've all done Wii golf and Wii bowling by just kind of like flicking your wrist in a weird sort of way. And people will be doing the same with Real Racer.
Have you played that one on the Switch, that where you milk the cow?
What's it called? One-two switch.
One-two switch. That's it. Yeah, I played that in a pub once. We didn't get. I've got some funny looks. Yeah, but back on topic. It's a fascinating story. I mean, you never know. This could be on a disc somewhere. You know, maybe floating around. There must be a playable version of it somewhere. Can you imagine if we somehow found it and was able to actually give it a go? I mean, I know some of us here have got the maracas, so that'd be really interesting to see actually in motion. It's fascinating. It's just this one image that it exists of it. You know, there's people who saw that and they didn't realize how, in 20 years' time, we'd be kind of obsessing over this one image.
Yeah, I imagine somewhere in Japan there must be several discs worth of sort of demo games, student games. I mean, there's probably tons of games that have had very minor appearances or just been previewed very, very briefly or just been work in progresses. They must be out there somewhere.
The sad thing about this game is that the only review we have is from the article where I found the photo, and that's it is quite difficult to operate with the maraca controller.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
9 out of 10.
The thing is though, it's like they've obviously gone to the trouble of making not only, like you said, Tom, presumably it's a professionally produced kind of control sheet that's stuck underneath the TV there. We're showing you what you need to do using the fishing rod, the maracas presumably on the right, and a normal controller in the middle. There's also what you'd have to, what looks like, again, a professionally created sort of plaque above the TV saying the name of the game. And it's like, this is 2001, where it wasn't quite as easy to get this stuff printed off, at a reasonable cost. So they obviously were being serious about demoing this stuff. It wasn't just kind of like a bit of an also-ran sort of thing. So there was obviously intentions there, I think, to do something with it. It wasn't just a tech demo or something, or at least that's what it seems to be.
I mean, the graphics on the screen, they look, they look pretty cool. Like, they look good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you've got fully texture-mapped road surface going into the distance. It's got pretty good draw distance on it. It doesn't seem like there's any pop-up in the background. You've got the barriers at the side. You've got the foliage and the trees on the left-hand side. So there's obviously a fully developed 3D model of a track there. And also the character in the middle, the female runner, is fully polygonal by the looks of things. So obviously some work went into this,
Well, I wonder if he got a good grade. That's what I wonder.
Yeah.
And so where can we get it?
Probably still better than Spirit of Speed as well.
Yeah. Lewis, one question I have for you. How did you get the logo graphic? Did you just take it off from the image and then kind of recreate it that way?
Yeah, I recreated it. If you look at the photograph, there's actually a little bit of text. I couldn't make out what it was at all.
It's like the real something, I'm sure.
Yeah, like the real. I thought it was a web address at first because it looked like something.com.
Yeah.
And I tried. That was actually one thing that I left out. I went through all these Wayback Machine archives trying to sort of look up these random addresses that I was trying to read, squinting at it. Like, what does that say? So, yeah, that was a sort of a trail that sort of ran dry, unfortunately. But, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a fascinating article. Please do go and read it. It's a great piece of work from Lewis. And, if you go to the web version of the Dreamcast Junkyard as opposed to the mobile version, you will see it. There's a big banner at the top which says The Mystery of Real Racer 9. It leads me to wonder if there are 8 other versions of Real Racer that came before it. Anyway, guys, let's wrap this one up. Thank you very much for listening, the listener, obviously. If you'd like to see any of the stuff we've talked about on today's episode, just go to thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk. You can find us on Twitter @thedcjunkyard. And, yeah, thank you very much for listening. Guys, do you want to just give out your own Twitter account so people can follow you if they wish? Mike?
Yeah, I'm at space_turnip on Twitter, and I hang around the Dreamcast Junkyard Twitter feed quite a lot, really.
Loitering,
yeah. Yeah, loitering.
Lewis, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at LewisJFC, and I also loiter around the Dreamcast Junkyard Twitter too, so catch me there as well.
Fabulous. And James?
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at Agile Harvey, and if motor racing is your thing and you are looking for a new team to support for the new season, you can follow at Harvey Racing 404.
Fantastic. And a little quick plug for me and Mike's new podcast. It's Power Drifting Pod, or Power Drift Pod on Twitter, or you can find us at powerdriftingpodcast.com. Right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you on the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.